I arrived as fast as I could. You are safe? For the moment, she said. The defenses have eliminated all but two of the intruders, according to my inventory. Are you certain? He said. I never forget anything, Winter said, and Akbar knew it was true. Leia and the rest of my team should be getting Anakin now, he said, then continued softly, We split up so that I could determine if you required assistance. She nodded. The expression on her face softened. I will not feel comfortable until I see the baby safe. Let's go, Akbar said, still out of breath. Together they began the long run uphill. Turpin raced feverishly up sloping corridors. His feet were raw, bleeding from running on the textured floor, but still he ran. He didn't care if this race killed him. He had to get to Fergan before the ambassador escaped. Fergan had jerked his controls and made Turpin reveal damning secrets of the New Republic, forced him to sabotage Akbar's B-Wing so that it had crashed into the Cathedral of Winds, made him betray the location of the Jedi baby. Turpin would pay his personal debt in any way he could, but Fergan would also have to pay the price. With determination coursing through his veins, Turpin passed the other Calamarian pursuers. Through the dimness, he could hear Fergan scurrying forward like a Craddock. Follow, Turpin wheezed as he shot past the others. Turpin leaped over fallen hunks of metal shrapnel, blasted doors that the invading stormtroopers had blown away. He emerged into the landing grotto to find Fergan already scrambling into one of the unoccupied matats. You can't escape, Fergan, Turpin shouted. He paused to catch his breath against the melted but now cooled hatch. Fergan slung one leg over the edge of the spider walker and settled himself into its cockpit. His face wrinkled as if someone had scrunched it up from the inside. We already destroyed your dreadnought in orbit, Turpin said. Finding energy deep within him, he staggered toward the walker. He heard the other troops catching up. Fergan looked amazed at the news, but then his face smoothed again with disbelief. I know better than to trust you, little fish. Your whole life is a lie. Fergan closed the transferrasteel canopy. The engines hummed to life. One of the outer blast doors had been completely torn away. The other hung half open. Wind sighed through the opening. In the clouded purple sky, the two larger components of Anoth rode overhead like stone clouds, exchanging lightning across the silence of space. Turpin snarled and ran to another spider walker. He was a chief starship mechanic. He had helped the Imperials work on their combat vehicles and their star destroyers. He could run any equipment, probably better than Fergan himself. In his panic, Fergan had trouble making all eight of the walker's legs move in sequence to make progress across the grotto floor, but he finally plowed ahead, swiveling the laser cannons on the joints of the articulated legs to blast one of the B-Wing fighters that stood in the way. Turpin powered up his spider walker and slammed down the canopy. The machine had crude controls and sluggish response, nothing at all like the streamlined controls used on Mon Calamari star cruisers. Fergan's vehicle approached the large opening at the cliff's edge, and Turpin knew from the design of the matat that it could climb straight down the rock face. He didn't quite know how Fergan would escape once he got to the bottom. He doubted the ambassador had thought that far ahead. Turpin found the fire controls and shot his lasers three times, taking out one joint of the other walker's legs. The lower portion of the metal limb sheared off and fell to the grotto floor with a clang. Off balance, Fergan's walker scuttled in a drunkard circle until he managed to compensate for the lost limb. Once again, he made for the exit. Turpin saw the powerful blaster cannon slung beneath his cockpit. If he fired both of them in the enclosed grotto, it would obliterate Fergan's assault transport. But the explosion would also destroy him and his own walker, and probably most of the B-Wings as well. Then Turpin saw other rescuers streaming into the grotto. Admiral Akbar himself came from a different entrance and stood with his own team next to a white-clad woman whom he recognized as Leia's companion Winter. He could never fire the blaster cannons now, but he vowed not to let Fergan escape. Working the controls, Turpin lunged the eight-legged vehicle forward in pursuit, just as Fergan's machine tottered on the edge. Akbar arrived in time to see the beginning of the battle between the two spider walkers. Turpin's lasers blasted out, striking the ambassador's matat. Fergan didn't seem to have a plan, intending only to get away. Turpin's walker scuttled forward. Its clawed foot pad struck sparks from the landing bay floor. Turpin blasted again and again with his lasers. Fergan fired back, but his shot missed, scoring sharp flakes of rock from the grotto walls. Turpin's Mat-At charged ahead, raising its two front clawed legs, and grabbed the metal limbs of Fergin's transport, raising it partway off the floor. Fergin's vehicle reached out with its own legs to grasp the edge of the cave opening, trying to haul itself forward and away. Turpin fired directly at the trans-ferrosteel canopy of the cockpit, but the laser shots could not pass through the shielded surface. His spider walker grappled with Fergin's vehicle, four mechanical legs planted firmly on the stone floor, four legs pushing with all his engine's capacity. A large chunk of rock shattered at the claw grip. With a horrible sound of rending, tearing metal, Fergin's walker finally broke free of the grotto opening. Turpin's Mat-At pushed forward and forward. Inside the cockpit of the ambassador's vehicle, Fergin frantically grabbed the controls, but did not seem to know which to use. Turpin continued his relentless blasting with the lasers. He shoved Fergin's walker completely through where the blast door had been blown away and held out the thrashing Mat-At over open space. Turpin released his grip. Ambassador Fergin's multi-legged vehicle flailed as it dropped through the air on a long plunge toward the jagged landscape far below. Before the assault vehicle could actually strike the ground, Turpin fired both of his powerful blaster cannons. The beams blew up Fergin's Mat-At with a blinding flash just above the spiked rock. And then, inexplicably, Turpin's walker continued its own forward motion, moving mechanical legs to drive him over the edge in a suicidal plunge. Akbar instantly knew what Turpin intended. Not wasting time with a shout that would not be heard, he lunged for the blast door controls. Just as the thrashing metal legs vanished over the lip of the cliff, Akbar punched the buttons, hoping that the skewed half of the door still functioned just enough. The heavy metal plate crashed down on top of the last footpad of Turpin's spider walker, pinning it to the cliff and preventing it from falling. "Help him!" Akbar cried. The other Calamarian scrambled forward, accompanied by the Admiral himself. Secured with a tow cable from one of the D-wings, they lowered themselves over the cliff to open the canopy of Turpin's walker. Inside, they found him shuddering and nearly unconscious with shock. The team rigged a sling and hauled him to the safety of the grotto. Akbar bent over him, looking stern. He called Turpin's name until the scarred Calamarian finally stirred.
"You should have let me die," he said. "My death should have been my punishment."
"No, Turpin," Akbar said. "We cannot choose our own punishment. There is still much you can contribute to the New Republic. Still, a great many things to do before you will be allowed to give up." Akbar straightened, realizing that those words could just as well apply to himself after he had run away to hide on the planet Calamari. "Your punishment, Turpin," he said, "will be to live." 23. The Falcon cruised over the lush treetops of Yavin 4, and Han Solo set the ship down in front of the great temple. He bounced down the landing ramp. Leia and the twins practically tackled him as they rushed to greet him.
"Daddy, Daddy!"
Jason and Zaina cried in peculiarly overlapping voices. Leia, back from Anoth, cradling the one-year-old against her chest, squeezed Han and gave him a long kiss as Anakin played with her hair. The twins jumped up and down against Han's legs, demanding the attention that was their due. "Hello there, little guy." Han grinned down at Anakin. Then he looked deep into Leia's eyes. "Are you all right? You've got a lot of details to tell me. That message you sent wasn't very explicit."
"Yeah," she said. "You'll get the whole story when we have some quiet time, just the two of us. I'm glad all of our children are home to stay, though. We'll protect them ourselves from now on."
"Sounds like a great idea to me," Han said, then chuckled and shook his head. "Say, weren't you telling me that I shouldn't go off and have adventures by myself?" Han stepped away from the Falcon as he saw Luke Skywalker striding toward him across the flattened landing grid. R2-D2 puttered along next to him as if reluctant ever to leave his master's side again. "Luke!" Han cried. He ran to give Luke an enthusiastic hug. "Great to see you up and around again. About time you quit napping." Luke clapped him on the back and smiled with dark-ringed eyes that shone with an inner brightness stronger than ever before. As he conquered each seemingly insurmountable obstacle, Luke's Jedi powers grew greater and greater. But, like Obi-Wan Kenobi and Yoda, a Jedi master learned to use his powers even less, relying on wit instead of showmanship. In the dense jungle surrounding the Masasi temple, a squawking racket boiled up as a gang of Woolamanders startled a pair of feathered flying creatures. The Woolamanders hurled rotten fruit as the flying creatures flapped into the air, shrieking down at their tormentors. Han glanced toward the disturbance, but Luke's gaze remained fixed on the falcon, as if held by a powerful magnet. Han turned to look and stopped. Kip Duran, still wrapped in the slick black cape that Han himself had given him, descended the boarding ramp. His eyes locked on Luke, and the two Jedi stared at each other as if psychically linked. Han stepped away from Luke, and the Jedi teacher silently walked across the weed-strewn landing grid. Kip reached the end of the ramp, planted his feet on the soil of Yavin 4 again, and stood looking penitent. Han could tell from Kip's rigid posture and his set jaw that the young man was terrified at having to face his Jedi master. Han felt cold, not wanting to be trapped between two people he counted among his dearest friends. Leia took the children off to one side, watching the encounter warily. Concern furrowed her brow as she flicked her gaze from her brother to Kip and back again. Luke walked toward his student slowly, as if gliding over the ground. "I knew you would come back, Kip." Han watched him, and it seemed that Luke had no anger in his bearing, no fury or need for vengeance. "Exar Kun is destroyed?" Kip asked hoarsely, but he knew the answer already. "Exar Kun will have no influence on your future training, Kip. The question is, what will you do with your ability?" Kip blinked his eyes in shock. You would let me continue my training?" Luke's expression softened further. "I had to witness the death of my first teacher. I also had to confront Darth Vader, my own father. I have done other difficult tasks. I did not plan these things, but each time I passed through the fire of an ordeal such as those, I emerged a more powerful Jedi. You, Kip, have been thrown into the flames. I must determine whether you have been consumed or tempered into a great Jedi. Can you forsake the dark side?"
Kip stumbled over his words.
"I will try."
"No," Luke shouted with the first glimmering of anger that Han had heard in his voice.
"There is no try. You must believe you will do it, or you will fail."
The jungle fell silent. Kip hung his head, and his nostrils flared as he took a deep breath. The young man's dark eyes glittered as he looked back up into Luke's face.
"I want to be a Jedi," he said.
24. Lando Calrissian felt as if the million credit reward was burning a hole in his account. He needed to invest it soon. It was a new feeling for him to have such a large sum of money and nothing practical to do with it. He had won control of Bespin's Tybana gas mines in a Sabacc game, and he had served for years as Baron Administrator of Cloud City. He had run metal mining operations on the super-hot planet Niklan. And now, with his huge reward from the blob races on Umgul, Lando saw no reason why he could not make a successful operation out of the spice mines of Kessel. "I really appreciate you taking me, Han," Lando said. He reached over to slap his friend's shoulder in the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. He knew that Han was not terribly pleased to leave Leia and his children again so soon, even if only for a day to drop him off at Kessel. He suspected, too, that Han was also worried about Chewbacca and the Maw occupation force, who had sent no word since advancing into the black hole cluster. Since the Maw lay near Kessel, Han probably hoped to learn some news. "It'll be worth it, if only to keep you from begging for rides all the time," Han said, looking in the opposite direction. He glanced out the front viewport. "I still think you're crazy to want to go to Kessel, even crazier to want to stay there." Ahead, the small planet orbited near its faint sun. The misshapen lump of Kessel had too little gravity to hold its own atmosphere, and so the gases streamed into space like a tenuous mane flowing out from its barren, rocky outline. The large moon, on which the alien prison lord Maruth Duel had stationed his garrison of pirates, climbed over the limb of Kessel, emerging from the wispy corona of escaping air.
"Last time I came here with Chewie," Han said, shaking his head, "we got shot down. I promised myself I'd never come back.
And now it's only been a couple of months, and here I am again. That's just because you're a good friend, Han. I really appreciate it. Mara Jade wouldn't want me to be late.
Han smirked. If she remembers to show up, you mean?
Lando laced his fingers behind his neck, staring at the rising moon as the Falcon arrowed into a close orbit.
She'll be there, Lando said. I'll bet she's been counting down the days.
Wish I had Chewie back as a co-pilot, Han muttered, rolling his eyes. At least he didn't say such hokey things.
At the mention of Chewbacca, both men subconsciously looked toward the glowing tapestry of ragged gases surrounding the Maw Cluster. Somewhere inside, Chewbacca and the rest of the Strike Force should be mopping up their efforts to retake the Maw installation. The black holes made communication impossible, so they had no way of knowing what had happened during the occupation.
I hope he's all right, Han, Lando said quietly.
Han leaned forward to finger the controls on the comm unit. He hesitated, and his face sagged for an instant. He flicked on the transmitter, then cleared his throat, businesslike again.
This is Han Solo on the Millennium Falcon, approaching Kessel.
Lando watched Han's left hand drift to the hyperspace controls. A new course had already been programmed into the navicomputer. Han was ready to dash away at a moment's notice if anything suspicious happened.
We're looking for Mara Jade, a representative of the Smugglers Alliance, Han continued. We request permission to land on the Garrison Moon. Please acknowledge before we come any closer.
Han's face was lined with concern.
Don't be so nervous, Han, Lando said. Things have changed on Kessel. You'll see.
Han's voice took on a defensive tone. I just don't want to take any chances after what's already happened.
Before Lando could respond, Mara Jade's crisp, businesslike voice came over the speaker. Lando felt his heart warm at hearing her subtle tone. He imagined her soft lips moving, forming the words.
You're half a day late, Solo, she said.
Well, Lando here wanted to make himself look presentable, Han said, grinning. And you know how much time that could take.
Mara gave a short, sharp laugh, and Lando glared at Han.
Come on in, then, she said. I've brought a defensive fleet from the Smugglers Alliance. The Garrison Moon is secure. We'll discuss our business there. I have an escort coming for you, something I think Calrissian will appreciate.